মাধব কুঞ্জবে হরি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবে হরি গোপী জনবল্লভ জীবন জারি গোপী জনবল্লভ জীবন জারি যশোরা নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন যশোর নন্দন ব্রজ জনরঞ্জন জামুন্নথিরাবনচারি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবে হরি জয় রাধা মাধব কুঞ্জবে হরি নিত্যলীলা প্রবিষ্ট অষ্টদশত শ্রী শ্রীমন স্তবাইন গ্রেস শ্রী ভক্তিবেদান্ত স্বামী শ্রীল প্রভুপত কি জয় প্রেম সকহ শ্রীকৃষ্ণ চৈতন্য প্রভু নিত্যানন্দ শ্রী অদ্বৈত শ্রীবাসী গৌর ভক্তি শ্রী শ্রী রাধা শ্যাম সুন্দর গোপ গোপীনাথ শ্যাম কুন্দ রাধা কুন্দ গির গোগরম কি জয় গ্রন্থরাজ শ্রীমদ ভগবতাম কি জয় শ্রী হরি নাম সংকীর্তন কি জয় গৌর ভেবানন্দে অল গ্লোরিস টু দি অসম অফ দ্য ডিভোটিস অল গ্লোরিস টু দি অসম অফ দ্য ডিভোটিস অল গ্লোরিস টু দি অসম অফ দ্য ডিভোটিস অল গ্লোরিস টু দি লর্ড শ্রী 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 গুরু গৌরাঙ্গা I was sitting with a group of devotees last night. We were talking about things, and the conversation came up about class this morning, and the mention was made, you can always tell how well prepared for class the person is by how long the Jai Radha Madhava goes. 35 minutes later, so I guess I'm moderately ready for classes. there we go, I had to kill time to my classes. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 11th canto, chapter 18, text 11, 12, and 13. We'll chant 11, and then I'll recite 12 and 13, and we'll go on from there. Yadasu. Yadasu. Got the right one? Yeah, okay. Niyame. Kalpam. Jaraya. Jatam. Vepatu. Atmane. Agnin. Samparopya Machita. Again. Somebody want to help me with the proper pronunciation on that one? Mati, you're the expert. Chitognim. Okay, that didn't help me at all. Samavisat. Yadasuniyame kalpo. Jaraya jativi patu. Atmanyagnim samoropya. Machitognim samovisat. I'm not very organized this morning. Yada so niyame kalpo. Jaraya jatave patu. Atmani atmanagnim samarpropya. Machitognim samavisat. Someone else want to? Patu Atma Im Samaropya Machitognim Samadhiset Yada. When Aso the saintly Vanaprastra Niyame. I see. Okay, excuse me. I tell you, I'm completely lost this morning. The saintly Vanaprastha, niyame, in his prescribed duties, akalpa, unable to carry on, jaraya, due to old age, jata, arisen, vipatu, trembling of the bati, atmani, within the heart, agnim, the sacrificial fires, samaropya, placing, machita, his mind fixed in me, agnim, the fire, samadhisat, should enter. Translation. If the vanaprastra is overtaken by old age, and because of his trembling body, is no longer able to execute his prescribed duties, he should place the sacrificial fire within his heart by meditation. Then, fixing his mind on me, he should enter into the fire and give up his body. Poor by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. Since the process of vanaprastra is recommended for those nearing the end of life, there is always the likelihood that one will prematurely succumb to the symptoms of old age and be unable to reach the final stage of sannyas. If one simply cannot carry on his religious duties due to old age, it is here advised that he fix the mind in Lord Krishna and enter into the sacrificial fire. Although this may not be possible in the modern age, we can appreciate the absolute seriousness of going back to home, back to Godhead, as evidenced in this verse. 12 yada kama vibhakeshu lokeshu nirayatmashu virago jayate samyan nyastagnir pavajetata. If the vanaprastra understanding that even promotion to Brahmaloka is a miserable situation and develops complete detachment from all possible results of fruitive activities, then he may take the sannyas order of life. Ishvayato padesham mam datva sarva samritvijay agnim sva pranaveshaya nirapeksha paribrajet. Having worshipped me according to scriptural injunctions and having given all one's property to the sacrificial priest, one should place the fire of sacrifice within oneself. Thus, with the mind completely detached, one should enter the sannyas order of life. Purport. One cannot maintain the sannyas order of life unless one gives up all materialistic association and engages exclusively in devotional service to the Supreme Lord. Any material desire will gradually prove to be a stumbling block in the prosecution of renounced life. Therefore, a liberated sannyasi must vigilantly keep himself free from the weeds of material desires, which surface principally in the form of attachment to women, money, and reputation. One may possess a beautiful garden filled with fruits and flowers, but without diligent maintenance, the garden will become overrun by weeds. Similarly, one who achieves a beautiful state of Krishna consciousness, such a nice description, a beautiful state of Krishna consciousness, takes the sannyas order of life. But if he does not vigilantly and painstakingly keep his heart clean, there will always be the danger of a relapse into illusion. Om Jnana Timadandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chaksu Unmilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guruve Namaha Mukam Karoti Vachalam Pangumlam Jayate Girim Yakripa Tamaham Bande Sri Gurum Dinatarino Avancha Kalpatudu Vistra Kripa Sindhu Behebita Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhakti Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. It's always nice when we get an opportunity to see how Krishna's hand is involved in everything, even the presentation of Srimad Bhagavatam class. I was originally scheduled to give the class tomorrow, but on Fridays I speak at the Bhaktivedanta Academy to the kids, and so I wasn't able to do that. Plus, the subject of tomorrow's verses is about taking sannyas, something I have no idea about, have no knowledge of, and have no intention of doing. So I'm a little unqualified for that particular set of verses. So Krishna arranged, okay, you're not qualified for this either, but at least give this a shot. So here we are speaking about the Vanaprastha. In this verse here, where are we? Come on, picture two. Yeah, verse 11. It's quite interesting, the description of the advancement of old age. Now, the advancement of old age is something some of us may be familiar with. Some of us may not. Some of us may be denying it's not happening at all anyway. I was at the doctor's yesterday for a routine checkup. And the doctor said to me, he said, well, it's good you've come in to talk to me about this as young as you are. I said, thank you very much for that. we do not like to admit the fact that we're growing old, because growing old means to admit that we have mortality. To admit we have mortality means to admit that we're not spiritual. This body is not eternal. This life in this world is not eternal. This consciousness of dwelling on what's going on around us is not eternal. And this aging body is designed in such a way to keep that in the forefront of our mind, at least when we get to this end of the spectrum. Okay, maybe when we're 20, we're eternal, we can jump off cliffs and do whatever craziness 20-year-olds do and not think about death. Even jumping off the third step of a ladder, I give it a little second thought now before, you know, well, my knee's going to take that, what's going to happen to my ankle? So, you know, old age is there to remind us, hey, you know, this isn't forever. So, and when I think about that, I'm reminded back in, 1979, when I lived in St. Louis, I had an apartment just down the street from the St. Louis Temple. And it was a large apartment building. I actually had apartment number 108, which was quite amazing. It was probably 10 stories, and it was an older building. It had been there since the Second World War, and there was an elderly couple that were the superintendents for the building. And we affectionately referred to them as Mr. and Mrs. Birth, Death, Old Age, and Disease. This couple were, at the time, they were well into their 80s, and they looked it. Except for the facade that they put on, the lady always wore, and I kid you not, mini skirts and high heels and an excessive amount of makeup, and she must have had no less than 20 wigs, and each day was a different one to, you know. And the gentleman always had on these kind of checked polyester suits that were way out of the trend by that point in time. Fashionably, they were not acceptable, but, and, you know, they walked in that way that really elderly people sometimes walk, but with this package that said something else. So it was like, oh, there's Mr. and Mrs. Birth, Death, Old Age, and hi, how are you this morning? You know, ready to drop dead at any moment? So, I mean, this illusion is all-pervading throughout society. We do everything we can. And I came across a handful of my favorite quotes about old age. I just thought I'd throw them out here. Old age takes away what we've inherited and gives us what we've earned. Now, if you think about that, that's actually very accurate, you know, because how we live is really, you know, what we're going to get in our old age, how we've taken care of the body, how we've acknowledged the functions of the body. 40 is the old age of youth, and 50 is the youth of old age. Old age, the crown of one's life, and the last act of the play. And my all-time favorite, old age will always be 10 years older than I am. So, now, reflectively, this is actually a very relevant verse, especially right now, as we've had a handful of devotees in our own community here, and the community I'm also connected with through my daughter in New Govardhan, that have come into challenges of elder years. At New Govardhan, they've had, I think it's three, maybe four devotees depart just in the last 6 months. Fortunately, we haven't had that here. We just had some serious health challenges for some of our devotees. So, you know, for most people, this life of old age is a time of fear, because it's a time when things are not clear to us. We don't know exactly what's down the road. You know, the body's aging, the senses are failing. The uncertainty of our future due to these things puts one in a very fearful state of mind. The nature of this world is that we want to be very sure of what's ahead of us. We want to be very settled and you know, comfortable in knowing where we're going, what we're doing, what's going to happen when we get there and all like that. But, you know, the very nature of having this body and this world itself is that there is no guaranteed future. Everything is very flexible according to so many things that we have no knowledge of and no control over. But for a follower of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we can develop the quality of abhaya. We can become fearless. Well, how can we become fearless? It's not that we don't die. It's not that we don't get old. It's not that we don't have diseases. We become fearless because we know that the Lord is very kind to his followers. And that by leading a focused, dedicated life of devotional service, by very fixedly, I had this conversation with my physiotherapist for my knee surgery the other day. She was explaining to me how I wasn't very stable in my one leg because of the surgery. And she was trying to come up with a word of what she wanted to see. And I said, Dridhavrata. She said, what's that mean? I said, fixed, one point of direction. She said, yeah, that's what you want. That's what you want. I said, yes, you don't even know. So this is, by executing devotional service in this way, we have a very bright and hopeful future. You know, we know that there is something positive ahead for us. We're not just going to be suffering from birth, death, old age, disease, and not know where we're going, or worse yet, know that we're going to have to do it all over again. Even if we don't make it back to home, back to Godhead, at least we know we're going to be by Srila Prabhupada's side, assisting him in preaching Krishna consciousness someplace. So this verse sets this up very clear for us, and it tells us what to do when we become very old, and our sadhana, our abilities to execute our sadhana, our functionalities to be able to do our sadhana, begin to dwindle. Now, as I was reading this, I was reminded of a person I know in Vrindavan. His name's Ghanashyam Baba. Ghanashyam Baba lives at the Samadhi of Gopalpati Goswami, just in the Radharaman temple complex. And go to see him every year, several times during Kartik. Ghanashyam Baba is reputed to be somewhere north of 110 years old. And he certainly doesn't move like a 20-year-old, but he's very clear. He sits on his little bed every day and receives visitors and speaks to them. He has a little container he keeps with ash from the sacred fire of Gopalpati Goswami and places it on their head. And every day he gets up and walks from his room to the kirtan hall, which distance-wise, maybe from the front of this building to the back of the building, that distance, and sits down and sings kirtan with the other devotees that live in the ashram there. Every day he does this. So, I mean, in one sense, we could say, yeah, his service has been hampered by the old age, but in another sense, he's very, very fixed and very blissful. If you see him, he doesn't generally have any facial expression, but once in a while he'll smile, and this smile just lights up the entire universe. His eyes become very animated, and you know, so old age can be like that. You know, maybe your devotional service is no longer, okay, I cook the Rajbhog offering, and then I clean the kitchen, and then I just serve out the prasadam, and then I go back in and I do the evening. Okay, maybe your devotional service is once a day you get up and you walk in the other room, sit down and do kirtan. But he steadily does that. And then this is the other end of the spectrum here. So, in this way, you know, we see that the verse is telling us. So when you get to that point, you can't do it anymore. Just fix your mind on the Lord in your heart. Bring that fire into your heart and then enter into that fire. Okay, now, early parts of the Bhagavad Gita give all descriptions about amalgamating the mind and the senses and breaking, you know, that, all that stuff there. I don't care what age you live in, that's just hard. You know, it's really, really a difficult thing to do. It's very heavy instruction, and it's, you know, very grave about, oh, you can't do your service anymore? Well, okay, well, we're not going to facilitate. You just go into the fire and be done with it. So, you know, at some point in creation, this may have been practical. But for us, we're actually very fortunate. We're born in Kali Yuga. Now, you know, we have, you know, no good qualifications in Kali Yuga. We know that Kali Yuga is not a place that, I want to be born in Kali Yuga. You know, I mean, Satya Yuga, there's just, everything's just amazing. You know, and then it begins to decline from there to Kali Yuga. In Kali Yuga, we're unfortunate, we're unlucky, we're unhappy, we're quarrelsome, we're lazy, we're misguided, and above all, we're always disturbed. Always disturbed. So how are any of these things, how are any of these qualities, qualifications to be happy about the fact that we're in Kali Yuga? They qualify us because in Kali Yuga is the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has come specifically for persons like us who are always disturbed, always unlucky, always unhappy, so on and so on. Quarrelsome. Quarrelsome. Just go to the internet. Quarrelsome, really, over everything. Lazy, you know. I mean, anyway, we won't go into all that. But instead of, as this verse indicates, entering into the sacrificial fire, Mahaprabhu has us enter into the fire of sacrifice. Now, it's just a play on words, it sounds like. But what is that fire of sacrifice? It is the Sankirtan movement. That is the process of kirtan, both public and inside the temple. It is the process of book distribution. It is the process of preaching. All the activities that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu wanted executed for the establishing of Krishna consciousness within the world. This is the benefit of taking our birth in this Kali Yuga. All right, we're not going to be entering into some fire because of our inability to, you know, whatever, but we do have the ability, due to old age, to still be within the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya. I remember Vibhu Chaitanya. Vibhu Chaitanya was the cook for Krishna Balaram Radhesham for so long. Wonderful devotee. For many, as long as I could remember going to Vrindavan, he was a cook. And then Vibhu Chaitanya became too old. You know this well. He became too old to cook anymore. So he sat in the temple room and distributed Charanamrita to every devotee that came. We have wonderful Charanamrita distributors here. You have never had Charanamrita distributed with such enthusiasm until you received it from the hand of Vibhu Chaitanya. So, you know, of course he's passed away now, but what a glorious life of service. So this elderly situation does not have to stop our service. Now, as I was reading this particular verse, I couldn't help but think of the pastime of Sanatana Goswami. Bhakti Ratnakara tells us that Sanatana Goswami had been living in Vrindavan for quite some time and decided that there's just too much going on here. I want to go out to Radhakund, I'll visit Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami who are living out there, and then I'll go to Govardhan and reside there for a while. Then I can get some work done. It's just too much happening. Now, those of us that regularly or recently have been to Vrindavan, we can talk about how busy Vrindavan is. 500 years ago, just imagine Sanatana Goswami saying, oh, it's just too much commotion here. I'm going somewhere else. So, I mean, I can only imagine. Well, anyway. So, at any rate, he decides. So he goes out to Radhakund, visits with Rupa Goswami, Raghunath Das Goswami, and then he drifts over to Govardhan. Finds a place, establishes himself there, and begins to execute his activity of writing, which is what Mahaprabhu was asking him to do. So, one of the vows that Sanatana Goswami had was to do Govardhan Parakram every day. Those of us who get an opportunity to go to Govardhan regularly, it's such a wonderful thing to see these people that live there that are so devoted every day, some of them twice, three times a day, full Govardhan Parakram, just, you know, totally focused. And then, of course, these old bhavas, you know, some of them young even, but, you know, 108 dandabats around at each spot. I mean, just incredible, the devotion like that. So he was executing like that. Now, there's three paths that people take for Govardhan Parakram. There's the outer road, which is actually a proper road that not so many people do. Then there's the inner circle, which is actually 24 miles. And it's part of the road, but part of going around. And then there's the innermost section, which is 14. That's the one that most of us commonly walk. Sanatana Goswami used to always do the 24-mile Parakram, the one a little bit out. He didn't want to take any chances of being too close to Govardhan Hill. Mahaprabhu, of course, had instructed all of his followers, and Rupa and Sanatana being his most immediate, don't step on Govardhan Hill. So he stayed a bit back and didn't want to take that chance. So he was doing like this every day. And this took a fair amount of time. As Sanatana Goswami became elderly, as he became quite old, you know, this became, you know, a bit of a challenge. It actually became quite troublesome. It's interesting to use that word troublesome in regards to A, executing our devotional service, but B, serving Govardhan Hill. I mean, what could possibly be troublesome? But at any rate, due to the infirmities of old age settling in on his body, it became difficult. But nonetheless, he was very focused. He did not want to break his principle of circumambulating Govardhan Hill every day. And, you know, he would suffer great hardship doing this. You know, it was not like just, you know, right around. There was difficulties in it. But he was very determined, as I was using the word, dridhavrata. He was very fixed on doing this every day. Now, of course, the Lord, we know, is situated in the heart of every living entity. And what to speak of his very dear devotees. And he understood the pain that Sanatana Goswami was going through. So he decided, I will do something about this. So one day, after completing his parikram, Sanatana Goswami returned to his bhajan kutir at Chakaleshwar Mandir area, Chakaleshwar Mahadev near the Manasi Ganga. And as he was there, he was approached by a little cowherd boy. And this cowherd boy said to him, Baba, he said, you're very old. Why are you walking around Govardhan Hill? There's so much trouble for you. Sanatana said, No, this is my regular practice. This is my bhajan. I must execute it every day. And the boy said, yeah, but you're an old man. You don't have to do this. Actually, some of us may be familiar with the phrase that I'm told that Prabhupada said, a number of people have told me this, that as far as Ekadasi, before 8 and after 80 is not required. So at any rate, so Sanatana said, no, this is my religious principle. I will not give it up. You're an old man now, so you can give up just this one rule. Not such a big deal. No. All right, then, the little boy said, I will carry you around. And Sanatana said, no, I cannot let you do that. I must walk around. I must do this by myself. So Krishna said, Baba, will you honor my words? And Sanatana goes on. He said, well, if they are honorable, of course I will honor them. So out of great loving compassion for his devotee, Krishna stepped on a flat Govardhan Shila, and he began to play his flute. And in playing the flute, Govardhan Hill melted upon hearing the sound of that flute. And because Govardhan Hill melted, the footprints of Krishna settled into that stone. Now there was a little calf nearby that heard the sound of Krishna's flute, and he came to hear, and he stood next to Krishna, and his hoofprint of his hooves also settled. So in this way, Krishna stepped off. He also put his cowherd stick and his flute imprint there. And then Krishna said, this Govardhan Shila, this is a piece of the stone from Govardhan itself. Sanatana Goswami said, yes. So what shall I do with it? He said, if you circumambulate this Govardhan Shila, your vow of walking around Govardhan every day will remain intact. For by circumambulating this Shila, you will be circumambulating all of Govardhan Hill itself. You will thereby get the same result. You will keep your vow intact, and you won't have to compromise your religious principles. So this is what we're looking for in the execution of our devotional service, is Krishna to give some facility for everything to be done nicely. And this is one of the names for Krishna, a person that's very expert at doing many things at once. He can accomplish so many things by one activity. So here we see he removed the burden of his devotee. He satisfied the heart of his devotee. He made some facility for his devotee to keep his vows, and he showed the importance of circumambulating Govardhan Hill. So Sanatana Goswami was very silenced by this, and he could understand that Kiriraj has been given to me by the Lord himself. So from that day forward, this is exactly what he did. He used to circumambulate this Govardhan Shila marked with the footprints of Lord Krishna. So in this way, his old age and his physical infirmities, the intrusions that they brought into his life, did not hamper the execution of his service. Because he was so sincere, Krishna made some suitable arrangement. We have a similar story with the Gopinath deity and Jagannath Puri. What's his name? Huh? I'll say it louder. The Pujari for Gopinath. My brain is just frozen. Anyway. Thank you. Yeah, Madhupandit. He wasn't able to reach up anymore to put the garland, and so the deity sat down. Yeah. So the deity sat down. Oh, my dear Pujari, I'm so difficult for you to serve me. Here, let me facilitate that. Okay, is this better? I mean, isn't that what you do when you're a parent? The kid comes with, you know, something. They want to put a garland on you, or they want to give you something they made for Father's Day or Valentine's Day or Mother's Day or your birthday or whatever. And they can't, so you lean down for them to be able to do it, you know. So this is the loving exchange there. Oh, it's so difficult. Okay, let me make it easy for you. So Krishna said, oh, it's too dark. Right, let me, this sits down. How many times do you see deity of Krishna sitting like this? And this one deity did. So in this way, Krishna satisfies the desires of his devotees. Now, speaking of this, since I was looking at Sanatana Goswami and yesterday was Shiv Ratri, I was thinking about one other pastime of Sanatana Goswami with a great devotee of Lord Shiva. This devotee's name was Jivana Chakravarti. He was very, very famous for his devotion to Lord Shiva, although he was quite poor, which usually we don't see as the case. Usually the devotees of Lord Shiva are very comfortably wealthy. He gives their blessings. But anyway, he spent many years living in Benares, worshipping Lord Shiva and, you know, praying to him for wealth. And finally, one night, Lord Shiva appeared to him in a dream and said, if you go to Vrindavan, there's one saintly person there. His name is Sanatana Goswami. And he has in his possession great wealth. And he'll share it with you if you tell him I sent you. So the Brahmin was very, very excited. He immediately packed up a little bag and headed off for Vrindavan. And there he eventually, talking to this one and that one, found there's Sanatan sitting deep in meditation. Up near Madan Mohan there. And of course, when he saw Sanatana Goswami, Sanatana Goswami is wearing just one kind of soiled loincloth and, you know, a bit, you know, like he didn't look like a wealthy person, you know. So he had a little doubt in his mind, this guy's going to be able to give me the desired riches I seek. So, but anyway, his Ishtadeva instructed him to do so. All right, so eventually he called out the name and Sanatana Goswami heard the Brahmin, came out of his meditation, said yes. So he explained to him, I'm a worshiper of Lord Shiva, my Ishtadeva has appeared in a dream and told me to come to you and ask you for wealth. And Sanatana was actually a little annoyed by this. He said, I go door to door begging a few crumbs. How am I going to have any wealth to give you? What is it, you know, I can't facilitate this desire. So the Brahmin was very disappointed by this, and he turned away thinking, okay, well, perhaps the message from Lord Shiva was just a dream, or I concocted it, or it's not really real, or something. So in the meantime, Sanatana Goswami is pondering, why would Lord Shiva send somebody like this to me for wealth? I don't have any. Wait a minute. I've got that touchstone, that Chintamani stone over there in the trash. So called one of his servants. He said, go find this man and bring him back. So he brought him back. In the meantime, he'd had somebody get the Chintamani stone, of course, out of the pile of rubbish. And he took the jewel and he said to the Brahmin, he said, I remembered after you left it, I do have something that will fulfill your desires. So he gave it to him, and the Brahmin was just overjoyed. It wasn't just a dream. Lord Shiva was really giving him his blessings. He was really having mercy on him. Now I'll be so rich. I'll be the richest person in the entire world. Everyone will know who I am. So we can see there was a little anartha in this guy's heart. At any rate, so after walking away for some distance with this touchstone in his hand, okay, well, first I'll do this, and then I'll do this, and then, you know, going down his list of things, he started, now, wait a minute. If Sanatana Goswami had this and had completely forgotten he had it, that means he has something much more valuable. So what could that be? I bet you he cheated me and just gave me this to get rid of me and has something even more valuable. So the Brahmin went back to Sanatana and he expressed his doubts openly to him. I think you're cheating me. I think you have something more valuable than this, and this is why this was in the rubbish. Sanatana Goswami smiled and said, yes, I do have something more valuable. You want it? Yes. Well, first you have to throw that away. You can just see the mind going back and forth. Yes, no, yes, no. So of course, we know he threw it away. Sanatana Goswami gave him the blessings of the holy name and the teachings of Sanatana Dharma and the mercy of Srinam and Krishna Prema and Mahaprabhu, and just, you know, it was excellent. So anyway, in this way, Sanatana Goswami is a very good example for us on all these things. At any rate, we can see it's a very difficult thing in this verse, getting old and continuing to do our service. You know, there are definitely obstacles. Now, the next verse, verse 12, and right here, we have the instructions on what the vanaprastra state of mind has to be if they're going to feel qualified to accept sannyas. Okay, first of all, they have to understand that even going to the heavenly planets is useless. I mean, pretty much any six-month bhakta realizes that, you know, okay, the heavenly planets are not what we're looking for. If you've read Bhagavad Gita once, you get that. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So if we understand the heavenly planets are useless, and if we develop complete detachment from all fruitive activities, and all of this after having developed detachment from the last 50 years of household comforts. So this is a pretty strong order for most of us, you know, to give up the heavenly planets. Okay, well, I can probably do that. You know, to develop detachment from fruitive activities, I'm a vanaprastra, I'm living in the forest, so I'm kind of working towards that. But to break that attachment of 50 years of executing household life, you know, what to speak of some of us have only been executing for 25 or 30 or 35, 40, whatever it is, you know. I mean, these kind of things make it very, very difficult for us to move forward unimpeded. Because we have these attachments that develop from this life, from weeks and months and years of doing the same thing in the same comforts in the same circumstance. If we conquer all those things, then we can accept sannyas. So I think this shows how many of us may actually be qualified for this sannyas order of life. I mean, you know, there are many sannyasis that put forward the idea that yes, everybody has to take. And there are many older householders who say, yes, I'm going to take. And when we look at this list, I think the list is going to be a little shorter than we might assume it is. You know, it's not just like an automatic thing. Okay, I've been married for this long, and now I've, the wife and I have separated, or, you know, the kids have grown, whatever it is. Okay, now I'll take sannyas. It's not an automatic thing. There are requirements. And aside from the requirements that the GBC has placed upon the proper establishment of the movement of the social orders, there's the actual spiritual requirements that are there for us to think about taking sannyas. So, you know, these are things that are there to protect the sannyas order. Anyway, fortunately for us, the taking of sannyas in this manner described here is not required. It's not necessary for going back to home, back to Godhead. But what is required from this list is a detachment, regardless of which ashram we're in, whether we're in the Brahmacharya ashram, the Grihastha ashram, the Vanaprastha ashram, or the Sannyasa ashram. Detachment from sense enjoyment is mandatory. Now, we may be in contact with the sense objects, but beginning of Bhagavad Gita, we learn quickly, even though we're in contact with the sense objects like a tortoise, we just pull our senses in and don't engage them. So we do have some exposure to this, but at the same time, we have to develop that mood of detachment if we have any hope of making tangible advancement in devotional service. And then we have verse 13 here. Little bit more talk about what needs to be done before taking sannyas. It appears here that the previous householder, who is now a vanaprastra, still has some possessions. It's not necessarily that they're just living in a hut somewhere, but that they have some possessions. And it's instructed here in this verse that if one is preparing to take sannyas, then he has to give all of his possessions to the sacrificial priest. Finally, the yajnik priest gets a decent donation. This is a common joke amongst the Puru heads. But here we see that at this time in history, the yajnik priests didn't have outside jobs. They just performed yajnas all day. They took care of the needs of everyone, and as a result, they were supported by the society. This was one of the activities that was necessary for the smooth functioning of the social order, and one of these activities that was a way to maintain those persons that had this inclination. And it wasn't necessarily they were just given big dollar amounts, anything like that. No, sometimes it was grains, food grains, vegetables, cloth, furniture, whatever. The things that a person would need to comfortably execute their life. This is how the Jagnik Brahmanas, the sacrificial priests, as it said here, were, supported. So this was an important aspect of society for these persons, because the samskaras, as we know them, given from the Goswamis, particularly Sanatana Goswami, Gopalpati Goswami, they're there for us to execute for a purpose. It's not that they're just something superficial that we don't have to do. These things are actually necessary for the smooth movement of social order from one ashram to the next, for the development of the consciousness of the children, for the development of the proper attitude of the family. These things are all there. And by executing these things, then one can smoothly develop the Krishna consciousness. Here we see that nowadays we see that there aren't so many people that do these things, and even less people that are qualified to do these things. So, in this age we have mercifully from Srila Prabhupada the chanting of the holy name to supplement all of that we're not qualified on. But this is an important aspect of the functioning of the social fabric of a Vedic society. At any rate, the candidate who's moving from Vanaprast to Sannyas has to give everything away, has to give up all that they have. And there's an explanation as to why. Because possessing these things becomes a stumbling block on the path of advancement. And there's a very important instruction in this purport here. It says, a liberated sannyasi must vigilantly keep himself free from the weeds of material desires. This is essentially a part of the sannyas ashram, and extremely important for those in the sannyas ashram, is to not have the presence of material desires. It's accepted as a grahastha that, okay, you're going to have some material desires after all your exposure to this and that and the other and raising this and doing so many. Okay, it's like, work on purifying them. But in accepting the sannyas order, you have to be free of these. And one must very diligently remove these desires, however they manifest. And it mentions here mainly through women, money, and reputation. Remove these from one's devotional activities. Those of us who live here, we've witnessed the wonderful service of Madhuri Lilananda as she plants and maintains all the gardens around the temple complex here, And she knows as well as anyone how a beautiful garden does not just become that way overnight. It doesn't just develop on its own. There's a lot of effort. Along with all the beautiful flowers are so many plants that are not wanted, weeds by any other name, and these have to be pulled. If they're not pulled, they'll grow larger than the flowers and overshadow them, or unseen, the roots will work deep within the soil and sometimes corrupt the roots of the nice flowers and things like that. So one has to be very careful about pulling these out and not just breaking them off at the top. That's a superficial thing. Oh, they're not there anymore. No, they're still there, very deep in the dirt. You have to pull the whole root out. And many times, however much above the ground the plant is, twice that amount below the ground or more is how far the root is. So we have to be very diligent at pulling these roots. Somebody that was expert at that was Radha Damodar. He would sit out here on the veranda during class and pull all the weeds out of these rock gardens here. It was a regular service, and you got to get them all out from the bottom there. So when you pull these out this way, then the garden that's being developed becomes very beautiful. Then it becomes, how does it explain here? A beautiful state of Krishna consciousness. I love that, the beautiful state of Krishna consciousness. So, these two devotees are very nice examples of how to maintain the garden of the temple and an example of how we can understand to maintain the garden of our Krishna consciousness by constant and steady and long-term. It's not that you plant the garden and then for the first 6 months you weed and then that's it. Okay, after 6 months they become less, but you still have to be constantly looking up, take that out. So the same way with our Krishna consciousness, We have to be constantly looking over the garden of our devotional creeper. Oh, what's up? Let me take that out of there. That's no good. We don't want that. You know, whatever. And it's going to be different for each one of us. That weed that grows is going to be different. Someone will be this, someone will be that, and here, there. You know, we have to be honest and self-examining about what are the weeds in my devotional service and how can I remove them, you know? And then there will be unrestricted flowers and vegetables and fruits for offering to the Lord. So since we're not actually in the sannyas ashram, though, the attitude of a sannyasi, detachment from sense pleasure, is what we do want to strive for. So it's not that we say, well, you know, I'm not a sannyasi, I'm not going to be a sannyasi, I'm not qualified to be a sannyasi, so just kick back with the remote control. What's that blind uncle song? No. So, at any rate, you know, we have to, by the blessings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, work at purifying ourselves, work at having that attitude of detachment within our devotional life. What happens if we don't? If we fail to execute that detachment, if we fail to remove those weeds, there is the danger of relapse into illusion. Now, although in this verse it's talking about the sannyasi, this is very pertinent to all of us in our devotional service. If we're not careful about the weeds that are in our devotional activities, there is the danger of relapse into illusion. What's the last thing you want to hear a doctor tell you when you're in the hospital recovering from something? Well, you've just had a relapse, you're going to have to stay longer. We don't want a relapse. A relapse is not good. We want to actually just continue to move forward. So we must be very careful in executing our devotional service, that our efforts, you know, to advance, to move forward, and do this by removing the different anarthas that are in our heart. And most importantly, probably the single most important anartha that we can work on, as exampled by the leelas of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates, is to commit Vaishnava Aparadha. We so easily let the tongue, and these days the finger, you know, move ahead without any thought or consideration of the consequences and commit Vaishnava Aparadha. This was something that with Jayananda was an excellent example of. If you were with Jayananda talking and someone started to offend a devotee or speak ill, he would just simply turn and walk away. He would have no part of it. So, you know, this particular activity is called the elephant offense for a reason, because it's the most dangerous thing, and it'll throw us right back into the pit of illusion and destroy our devotional service. So these are the type of things that we can learn from these three verses, even though we may not be qualified vanaprasthas living in the forest and entering into the fire and preparing ourselves to take sannyas and so on. Still, we can take the essence of these verses and understand how they apply to our own devotional service. So we'll finish there. Got a couple of minutes. If anybody has any questions, comments, corrections, they're always welcome. Oh, my goodness. We have a guest here. Let's start with her.
Perfect for me today. I am fascinated by this this purport here, this translation of this verse. That it's prescribing that the vanaprastha, the old person, place the sacrificial within his heart by meditation, then fixing his mind on me, should enter the fire and give up his body. I don't think he means enter into a fire out there. He means enter the fire in the heart that he's... So I'm thinking about Sati, right, who gave up her body after Lord Shiva was insulted. I think she did that. She entered into meditation and gave up her body that way.
And the body became consumed by flames, yeah.
So this is really far out. I don't think we talk about this very much, you know, as we're getting older and, you know, how I think it's really important. I don't know if you know anything more about it, or it's just interesting because we know that yogis can leave their body at will, like it becomes like a city or a power, and yet I haven't really thought about that at all.
Well, I don't think any of us place the concern on or the thought that we're going to leave the body in that manner. We're just executing our devotional service, and all of a sudden one day we end up in the hospital or fall over dead in the garden or whatever. You know, I mean, here again, how much focus are we putting onto this? And part of that is the historical time too. people generally didn't just drop dead out of no reason. They prepared for this, and this the lifestyle facilitated that, which we don't really see that nowadays. Yeah.
Can I just touch upon it? The fire is actual. It's an actual fire. We find when Vidura and Dhritarashtra left home, at the end of their life, they did this. They entered into the fire and departed. But that this is like for other ages. Kaliyug can accept. But, you know, it's an actual fire. You go in sacrificial fire, sit down there. If you read how Dhritarashtra left home, that was what we did.
Actual fire or fire from the heart or fire from the mind, you know, I'm always on fire, so it's not going to be much different in my case. Pran Prabhu, and then Jatari, and then John Mastami.
I have one comment, one question.
Okay.
The question is that you read that before they prepare for sannyas, they should offer their assets to the Jagi Brahmana.
Sacrificial priest. The Ritvik.
Okay. Now...
That's the actual name.
They are giving up everything by offering to the sacrificial priest. Sacrificial priest also going to give up at end of life, or he's going to hoard everything?
Yes, he has to. Actually, Prabhupada says if you accept donation from someone and use it for sense gratification, you have to come back and repay that. So any donation you receive has to be engaged properly. And ultimately, you have to give everything up too. It's not that there's one class of men that, okay, you be attached for life, no problem. Just sit there and enjoy. No, it doesn't work that way. Even you want it to work that way, it's all going away at death anyway. So better to give it to somebody, you know.
And I was thinking in the past times of Narad Muni, Sri Vyas Pandit, who was Narad Muni. In his dialogue with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that's written in Bhakta Loka by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, that Mahaprabhu, he took sannyas and then in separation, Sivas Thakur was so much tormented that he always were with Lord Chaitanya, but now he's missing, he cannot be with him because he has to be with Malini Devi and his family, brothers and everyone. So then Mahaprabhu proposed to him, why don't you take sannyas and stay with me? Then problem solved. But then he started crying and he's saying that, but she reminds me of you more than when I'm with you. So then Mahaprabhu says, I was just testing you. You should stay. So Sivas Thakur never took sannyas to travel with Mahaprabhu. So Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur comment on that. That I was thinking like that fruitive workers, they romanticize the world for exploitation. The jnani, they demonize the world for renunciation. And bhakti utilize the world for Krishna's pleasure. So whether somebody takes sannyas or not, not given so much, even though he was a sannyasi when he gave the commentary, but he didn't emphasize so much about it. He said, we are interested for bhakti, pleasing Krishna. What about ashram?
And that's going to be the saving grace for most of us. Chitari Prabhu?
My wife and I have been reading Bhagavad Gita, and it just kind of reminded me, in the introduction to Bhagavad Gita, you know, we were talking about old age and death and so forth, and Prabhupada really nails it. He says, Bhagavad Gita, it is a great mystery. He says, just what is the Bhagavad Gita? He says, the purpose of Bhagavad Gita is to deliver mankind from the nescience of material existence. He says, every man is in difficulty, you know, old age, death. In so many ways, as Arjuna also was in difficulty in having to fight the battle of Kurukshetra, Arjuna surrendered unto Sri Krishna, and consequently Bhagavad Gita was spoken. So he says, not only Arjuna, but everyone is full of anxieties because of this material existence. He says, our very existence is in the atmosphere of non-existence. Actually, we are not meant to be threatened by non-existence. So that's our...
It's a foreign state. It's not our constitutional position. Sean Mosty, may I finish there? It's after 9.
The pastime of Snatan Goswami getting Krishna's mercy and assistance in his rendering service in old age, is this something that is a phenomenon that we can expect? Is there other examples? I know of this one.
But, there are so many examples, and whether we can expect them in our life depends upon how pure this is.
Yeah.
The purity of the heart, the purity of the intentions, the purity of the execution of our devotional service depends upon whether Krishna appears to us in a generic way or personally stands in front of us.
So in other words, the principle is with old age, as it lessens our capacities to function, we should persevere and
absolutely
try to do as much service as possible in a stable way.
According to our circumstance, yeah. Like I said, Ghanashyam Prabhu, Ghanashyam Baba, I mean, what's his service? To get up and walk to that other room and sit and do bhajans all day. Otherwise, he sits there and chants all day long. That's his real service. Yeah. Chants unlimited rounds, So, yeah, according to our circumstance. All right, we'll finish there. Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. I almost forgot. I have Charanamrita from Chakaleshwar Mahadev's Abhishek here. I'm going to take it outside here at the prasadam table, and I want to pass it on.